welcome to another edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. We've not been with you for what seems like about a week and a half or so, and it seems most bizarre, Lydia Greenway, when we've been bashing out podcast after podcast after podcast. A 10-day break or so seems like an eternity, but we are back. And there's a reason that we have left it for this long, because we wanted to end with a complete roundup of the Women's International T20 series between England and New Zealand. It was pointless kind of just going in at the third T20 or the fourth. Let's do them all as a whole and take an overview of the entire series, which England won 5-0. But before we do all of that, hello, Lyd. How are you? It seems like ages, even though I saw you actually. I saw you yesterday at Lords.
Yes, hello, Dagnall. I know we only saw each other yesterday. I have to admit, the sun is out, and that is great news because everyone is in such a better mood. I've just been outside, actually. My neighbours are out in their garden. They're having a glass of wine. Yeah, we're recording on a Thursday at 5:15, which is an ideal time to crack open a little drink, sit in the sun, and get a few nibbles out.
It's interesting you say this, because actually, dear listeners and viewers, we were supposed to record this at around about 10:30 this morning. And then I get a text message. And we sorted all of this out at Lord's yesterday. Now, essentially, this is my fault, because I forgot to bring our tripod so we could record our entire podcast live at Lord's. Now, we did manage to get an interview with the England head coach, John Lewis, which you will hear later on in this podcast. That said, we then said, oh, well, why don't we record it remotely and we'll do it in the morning. I can get it out in the evening. Now, you then sent me a text message. Oh, I can't do it. I can't do 10:30. Can you do 5 o'clock? Well, it's 5 o'clock. It's a glorious day. We should be sat outside having a beer. I will admit that I've had one. I've had a beer because it's glorious. I've been working in the garden today, chopping back the Japanese roses, which is a hideous job, let me tell you. And I've still got bits of garden in my hair. You might be able to see. There's not any in that bit of my hair, in the back bit of my hair, because it's bald. But the transplanted bit of hair, there is bits of debris from the garden in there. So I have had a beer. I thought, stuff you, Lydia Greenway. Yeah. If you have changed the timing of recording, I'm going to have a beer and then we're going to record. How do you like those apples?
I am all for that, Daggers, and you're absolutely right. It's my fault that we're recording now. So hands up, and actually you should crack open another one. Why not?
I should really. Well, it's my fault. Originally, the whole thing, we keep blaming it. This is just me and you all over. No, it was me. It was very not British. You. It was me. Very British. But essentially, it was my fault originally because I forgot the tripod and so we couldn't do necessarily what we wanted to. Anyway, gardening is done. Beer is had. And the opportunity to talk women's cricket with you and at any time is always good fun. And it doesn't matter what day it is, what time it is, we're always willing to talk about what we've seen and the game itself. So let's go with the headlines. I think this edition is pretty much going to be a culmination of what we have seen, because the international summer has finished for the England women and they have been utterly dominant. They won the one-day international series against Pakistan by 2-0. One of those was rained off. They won the T20 series 3-0. They beat New Zealand, who were the second overseas team to come in, at 3-0 in the ODI series and a 5-0 whitewash in the T20 series. As an overview, Lydia, I mean, it really has been, and I think the gulf is starting to show between England, Australia, India, and possibly the rest of the world, which is no real surprise, but the gulf is there.
No, it's not a surprise, because when you look at what those three countries are doing and what they have done, they've invested in really good domestic competitions, which attracts the best players in the world and creates really good quality cricket for their domestic players to play in. And unfortunately, for the side like New Zealand, who's come over and will probably be flying back really, really disheartened, unfortunately for those players, they just are already starting behind. When they landed in England, they were already behind because of what's obviously going on back home in terms of lack of opportunity to play really good quality cricket. So by the end of the series, Daggers, I don't know if you felt the same, but I felt for the Kiwi girls.
I did.
I really did. But we have
because
we have
it's not their fault, is it, Lyd?
No.
It's really not their fault. And it was something that Katie Martin told us on this podcast, the fact that only the centrally contracted players can concentrate on their cricket, you know, throughout 12 months of the year. But those coming behind have still got jobs. They still have to earn a living. And she said a great position for New Zealand cricket to be in would if each region had four contracted players that they, well, that's just four. Look at what is going on in the franchise model here and will do in the county model next year. I mean, everybody is going to be contracted. And there is no real surprise given the resource from one country to another.
No, there isn't. But I think in the same notion, we should give a lot of credit to England, I think, as well. I think the way that they played throughout the series, obviously the way that they managed their side, they were willing to chop and change the side because they were looking ahead to Bangladesh. And they played some really good cricket. It'll be interesting for people to listen to what John Lewis had to say, and I'll probably pick up off one of the things that he mentioned after we've listened to it. But they have played very, very good cricket. And when you then think about the fact that they have to sit down and narrow 17, maybe 18 players down into 15, that is going to be really, really tough task, because I think names who have done well this series could well be left out for that World Cup in Bangladesh in only, what is it, a couple of months' time, 2 or 3 months' time. So I'm pleased I'm not having to select that squad, I have to admit. I've just been so dominant.
The other thing is, Lyd, and I talk about New Zealand and it's not being their fault, it's also not England's fault either. They have to play. They can only beat or play who they are put up against, and it is not their fault that New Zealand are not necessarily well resourced, or Pakistan, or whatever. And I think that comes in a completely different conversation as to how some of these international sides and boards can get the finances, whether it be from the ICC or whoever, to try and boost the amount of professional women players within their country. But England, in knowing full well what the Gulf is in resource and help financially, they should have that attitude of wanting to dominate sides like New Zealand. Heather Knight called for a ruthless streak and a ruthless nature to try and go up against India and Australia when the World T20 happens. That is exactly what they have done, Lyd. They really have been ruthless.
Yeah, it has been. And that would be one area where, if I've looked at that England side, even in the last 12 months, I don't think they've been as ruthless as they can be. And I think there has been a shift towards that mentality of, oh, you know, we've won 4-0. Who cares if we... Well, then it's not that way of thinking. But if it's 4-1, we've still had a really convincing win. Actually, no, that mentality is we are really going to dominate. And that's a really pleasing thing to see. I think, again, a bit of a caveat, and we actually spoke about it yesterday, is we really judge them when they come up against Australia. And then we also threw India into the mix as well with that conversation, because they're the ones.
Let's actually talk about the conversation that we had off air. Was the fact that I think, and I think you're in a similar vein of thought to me, that all of this work that they're doing, the chopping and changing, and again, I'll come to that in a second, but all of this ruthless streak, the dominance that they've shown over this last summer, and also in the T20 series against India in India in December. But all of these things that they're trying is basically for one or two, maybe two matches. That's what we're looking at. It's against Australia in the World T20 or India in the World T20, so that they are prepared for that match. The likelihood is it will be in a semi-final. They will meet one or the other, unless it's an Australia-India semi-final, as it was in the World T20 last time, in South Africa. But it's being prepared for that moment of pressure when the stakes are at the highest, and having a side and a squad that is prepared when the going gets really, really tough in those situations. And I think that would be your angle too.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what the boxes that they have ticked in terms of giving themselves the best chance against those two particular opposition is, I don't know about you, but I feel comfortable and I have a bit more confidence in the depth in the batting order now. And that mainly comes from someone like Charlie Dean and the way that Heather Knight played at Lords. And for me, I think Heather's got, she's not, I don't know if it's fair to say she's been criticised, but I think some people have questioned her in the T20 game and what she brings to it as a cricketer. But for me, the way that she played yesterday, that is how Elise Perry would play for Australia when they're in the pits. The way that she run, I nearly said something else then. The way that she
can say it. It's our podcast. You can even say arse or bell end if you really want to. They were our strongest possible words. Is any of those applicable at this time?
I couldn't bring myself to do it. My parents are probably listening. but the way that she played, one thing I don't know if many people will have noticed, but her running between the wickets was unbelievable, because she will say she's not the quickest in the team, but if you rewatch the way that she ran between the wickets, that for me was a masterclass in running between the wickets, which I don't know in this country if we actually teach it very well. I've got a bit niche there, but
No. You're allowed to go niche. My goodness, that's a massive pint of something pink. What's that?
It's squash.
It's squash. I thought it was rosé. But anyway, I digress. Is that more, going back to Heather Knight's running and how good it was yesterday at Lords, and I concur with you, is that an awareness? You know, she isn't the quickest in the England team. You look at a Wyatt or a Bouchier or someone like that between the sticks. Is that actually sort of awareness of where fielders are, the gaps, etc., the sort of slope of Lords even? What is that down to?
Yeah, I think it's awareness and intent. Like, so if you watch, she will, after her first run, she will turn and she will come back as if she's coming back for the second, and she will make a decision after two or three steps. Whereas when you look at poor runners between the wickets, they will turn, they stop, they look, and then they decide if they're going to run or not. So, yeah, for me, it's a small thing, but I just thought she did it really well. I like Freya Kemp as well in there in that middle order too. I know she hasn't always come off, but I do think she adds a lot of value. I don't know if you would agree with that, obviously being a lefty as well.
I totally do. I think we should get to our sort of look at the sides and what worked and what didn't in a few moments' time. Let me just quickly run through the results in the five-match series. It started down in Southampton with England scoring a monster 197 4-3, runs right down the top order, really. Danny Wyatt had a great game, and Freya Kemp towards the back end. New Zealand nowhere close, 138 for 9. They won England by 59 runs. A horrible evening at Hove, which you had to suffer down there, where absolutely hosed it down, and I was watching on my sofa thinking, God, Lydia's going to be getting wet, isn't she? Whilst I was nice and dry. But England won that one by 23 runs via the Duckworth-Lewis method. Not a great deal to be taken from that game. In the third one at Canterbury, that was probably the best game of the bunch. England managed to win by 6 wickets with 4 balls remaining. And when I say the best game of the bunch, probably the best or closest New Zealand got to trying to win. Had they managed to take some catches, they might very well have won that third T20 international down at Canterbury. The Oval was just almost a walkover. New Zealand were hideous. 103 for 8. England bowled beautifully and fielded just as well. And they knocked off the 104 needed to win with 51 balls remaining. And in the last one at Lords, England 155 for 7. They were in trouble at 87 for 6, but Heather Knight and Charlie Dean, a decent 57-run partnership there, helped England to a respectable total. New Zealand struggled. Even though they were going nicely, they sort of collapsed like a deck of cards, as has been the case for them. They get off to sort of solid but slow starts, and then when the run rate climbs, they just fall apart. They finished off 135 for 8, and England women won by 20 runs. So, player of the series was Sarah Glenn. She picked up 8 wickets in the series, as did Sophie Eccleston, 6 for Charlie Dean. But more importantly, let's get the thoughts of the England head coach, John Lewis. He caught up with Lydia after the match at Lords.
John, first of all, thanks for joining us on the Daggers and Lids podcast. Congratulations, a brilliant series win, also a brilliant summer. Just give us your reflections on how that's gone for you.
Yeah, really pleasing, first of all. I actually thought this series in particular, we played some really, really good cricket against what I feel like is quite a good New Zealand side. And actually, with the standard of cricket we played, we forced them to look below the standard they actually are. So I think they'll probably go home with their, you know, heads down, but actually they challenged us at times, and we had to play some really good cricket to stay on top. I suppose what's most pleasing is that we got contributions from lots of different people across the whole summer. So even from the series against Pakistan through to this series here, you know, both of these series, across the whole summer, different people put their hands up at different times, and they coped with the distraction of rotating the team a little bit as well, which I was really pleased with too.
What did that look like? Because obviously there was a lot of chat. Heather mentioned how you wanted to bring a bit of chaos into the group with selection, or maybe you guys not being available on a match day. How did you communicate that, and how did it play out within the group?
Well, it was interesting because actually we had a meeting yesterday with some of the more senior players, and they said, "Oh, we thought you were going to do more than that." And I was like, "Well, I could have done." But I didn't think that was particularly fair. So I tried to be as fair as I can with people. Me and Heather dropped out for one game, and Nat came in, and Alex took over the reins, because these things can happen on tours of the subcontinent. In fact, it can happen anywhere, really. Yeah. It can happen here in this country. So it's good practice for us to do those sorts of things. But the players coped really well with the changes. They stayed really calm throughout the series. I think it gives us a nice, actually made it a lot easier to select the team, so I think I might do it again.
Well, it's obviously worked for you as well. In terms of selection, obviously you have mixed things up a bit. How much of that is to do with the conditions here in England, but also perhaps looking ahead to the T20 in Bangladesh?
So the conditions that we played here, we took pretty much no interest in what the conditions were here. This last game in particular, we played 3 seamers on a wicket where it looked hard to play against the spinners. So we would generally play 3 spinners here at Lords, so maybe even 4 like we played at Southampton. And the wicket at Southampton was definitely not a 4-spinner wicket, and we tried 4 spinners. So we're looking at different combinations of teams, different combinations of players. And then towards the end of the series there, I'm looking at the fast bowlers, because that's probably my biggest headache in terms of selection. About who's going to get on the plane to Bangladesh. We don't have to pick it now, which is great.
Yeah.
We've still got some time. We've got some time in the 100 to look at the players and see how they go, and probably make final decisions towards the end of the 100 around how everyone's travelling, and hopefully, fingers crossed, no one picks up an injury, because you know they've got 16 really talented players here, all deserve to be on the plane. So, and we've got some talented players outside of this group as well. So you know, selection's really really hard. And the fact that different people are contributing all the way through the series, and players that are coming off the bench are coming in and doing really well, I think it shows the depth that we've got. And that's what we've been trying to do over the last probably 12 months now, is try to grow the depth of the side by giving people opportunities while still continue to win. And, you know, if we can balance those things out, you know, we feel like we're doing a really good job. So the tricky bit now is finding our best 11, because everyone's playing so well. So, yeah, that's tricky, so we'll see how we go.
I suppose it's a good headache to have, isn't it? Because you have created that depth, or even more depth than there was when you took over. Just one question on the pace bowlers, I guess. How much of a role do you think that will play in Bangladesh? Are you thinking it's something early tournament where maybe the wickets are slightly fresher and have a bit more pace in them? Or do you think actually it will play a part throughout the comp?
Well, I think the reality is we don't know.
Yeah.
ICC take over the wickets, so it's, you have the same grounds person, but different instructions. So it's very tricky to know. So I think you've got to take a really well-balanced squad. We're fortunate we've got some really talented fast bowling all-rounders. I think that's really, we're really fortunate in that space, and obviously Nat and Fred Kemp and Danny Gibson. But we've also got some really talented strike bowlers in Lauren Bell and Lauren Filer. So, and unfortunately Mihika Gore's picked up an injury. I think he's a really exciting young cricketer. I don't actually know is the answer. If you're going to predict, we're going to Bangladesh, spin will play a big part. Yes. And so that's the reason why we have Lindsay Smith in the squad as backup, and sometimes perhaps even a frontline spinner. So, you know, I think we're going to have a really nicely balanced squad. The tricky bit is getting it from 16, 17 to 15. That'll be really tricky. But we'll see how everything plays out over the next couple of weeks.
And obviously the 100's coming up. How much of an eye will you keep on that in terms of, I'm guessing by the way that you're chatting and what we've seen, people who are in this current England squad more than deserve to be there. So are you looking for future talent when it comes to things like the 100 in a week or so time?
Bit of both, really. I want our players to go and dominate that competition.
Yeah.
That's not happened, really. It happened a little bit last summer with Tammy and Dunks and Boosh. They all were up in the top run scorers. I want our England players to go and show what good players they are and dominate franchise cricket. And actually become the marquee players in world franchise cricket as well as top quality international players. I want our girls to go and show that they can really, really play really good cricket in a different situation, which sometimes for our players is tricky because we run an environment here which is maybe a little bit different to other environments, and we're really, really supportive. I know that sounds a bit like other environments aren't supportive, but I know they are. But like, we are overly supportive of our players. And we try and make them feel as safe as possible when they're in our environment and out on the cricket field. And sometimes in other environments with different messaging from different coaches and different distractions around them, that can be tricky. And they might be asked to play in a different way that we ask them to play. So sometimes that can be tricky for them. So actually going in is a really good challenge for them to see how they can perform in the 100.
And just finally, obviously here at Lords, wrapping up the series, a crowd which even a few years ago wouldn't have even been seen following the women's game. How exciting is that for you as head coach and I guess just a general cricket fan to see the growth of the game?
Yeah, it's super exciting. Off the back of last year's crowds where I was really interested to see what would happen this year in a standalone series against a New Zealand side, apart from rather than an Ashes series or an Indian series. And the people coming out to support has been amazing. You know, the difference between the men's crowd and the women's crowd is pretty obvious, and it's so much more family orientated. It's a brilliant crowd. They're so supportive of the girls, and I think the most important thing is that the girls love it. They really love playing in front of a crowd, and they really appreciate the support, and they actually thrive in it. So actually I'm not sure what the crowds will be like in Bangladesh and whether or not there will be many people that turn up to watch the games live. I'm sure there'll be big crowds on TV, but it'll be interesting to see if there aren't crowds and it's a little empty in the stadium, how we cope with that after having been, I suppose, spoiled by the brilliant support that we get here.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch. And yeah, just finally, thank you for obviously your time having a chat with us, and well done again on the series win, and obviously best of luck for the series ahead.
Thanks, Liz. Cheers.
John Lewis speaking to Lydia Greenway. I thought the best part of that interview, I have to say, was the camera work. Because one of us forgot the tripod. And so I was able to sort of, I almost, do you remember an episode or a programme on Channel 4 called The Word with Terry Christian?
No, I don't. What decade
you
was
don't
that?
Remember. You're too easy, Tiger. Well, anyway, they used to do sort of like extreme close-ups and have really mad cameras. And sometimes I felt as I turned the camera from the two shots of you and John Lewis and then turned it into a one shot as smoothly as I could, because my arms were aching from actually holding the camera in that position. And I thought, oh, this could be like an episode of The Word. Those of a certain age will understand that reference. Obviously, Lydia, you are far too young. What was the big takeaway for you from what John Lewis said?
Yeah, so the one thing I picked out from him was the sort of case that he was making, that the side had made New Zealand look worse than they were. And I think that's a fair point. I think that's a really fair point. I think that the fact that they've been going with the three spinners more often than not, I think, has really helped them dominate in the middle overs particularly. And obviously with the bat, I think when you look at the different performances from different players, I think everyone's chipped in. So I would agree with that. I thought he spoke really well. What anything that stuck out for you?
Well, it was interesting what he said about the chopping and the changing of the squad. And a lot of people have had a lot to say about this. And I think if I'm John Lewis, I can turn around. He wouldn't do this. He's not that kind of bloke. But I can sort of say, well, stuff you, we're winning. And I think every single change that they have made, they get to see something different. This is a bilateral series. There is no qualification for anything. So why not? Why not use these series to take a look, knowing that you are a pretty strong side and you have still got a core of senior players within it to try and help either younger players through, or the dynamic of two seamers or three seamers or two spinners, three spinners or two all-rounders, however you want to play it. Different partnerships at the top of the order. We saw Bouchier and Dunkley. We saw Wyatt and Dunkley. We saw Wyatt and Bouchier. But you know, he knows what his core positions are going to be. Nat Siver at four, Heather Knight at five, Amy Jones at six. So he knows those. He knows Wyatt's going to be one. He pretty much probably knows Bouchier is going to be two, and Capsey will be three. So I think his top six are there. But it's always nice, I think, to take a look at different partnerships and how they've developed. How is Sophia Dunkley developed being out of the side and then coming back in? What can Danny Gibson offer me if Nat Siver Brunt isn't part of the side? How do the spinners do without Sophie Eccleston? You know, is that the reason that Dean and Glenn, I know it's not the quality bowlers in their own right, but, you know, you can argue, you know, how can they be the strike bowlers or the main threat without a Sophie Eccleston in the side? Yeah. I like the fact that they've done this. When else are you going to do it? You're not going to do it during a World T20. I think now is the time. You're not going to do it for any kind of qualification process. I think good on you for doing that, because they do have the depth. And I like also that it keeps players on their toes. That sort of sense of competition that they still have to go out there and perform when they get the opportunity. And so it's raising the stakes and raising the pressure just that little bit more. We go back to the India and Australia pressure situations, you know. So if you can do your best to recreate high stakes matches or positions within the team that, you know, that put you in a mindset of it being a high stake, then I think that's a good thing. The one thing I'm a little surprised, and in fact someone got in touch with me on social media, was that Amy Jones was ever present. Now, Amy Jones is the biggest rubber-stamped, absolute first name on the team sheet within the England T20 side. What they didn't try is if Amy Jones goes down with some kind of illness or injury, and I wouldn't have minded seeing Bess Heath have a game or two, because I think we know everything there is to know about Amy Jones. And that is not a criticism. I just think it's a little bit of a surprise. If you're doing it elsewhere, why wouldn't you do it with the keeping spot?
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. You're right. That's probably the one thing that they didn't throw into the mix, because John Lewis did say, obviously, they want to throw chaos at the side. So, maybe that – it'd be interesting to know why that was the case, actually. And for Bess Heath, you know, for her to have maybe had that opportunity, it would have been nice for her to have just got a bit more experience under her belt. But, have to try and find out about that
one. Yeah, maybe. So how do you see this then? You know, he's going to have to whittle down. It was interesting he mentioned about also Mahika Gore in the fast bowling ranks. And I thought, again, last night, Filer bowled with pace and bowled with fire. I thought Lauren Bell bowled very well. And I like her sort of, you know, she had a chastening experience in that one-day international in the Ashes last year, bowling at the death against Australia. No doubt she would have learned from that. And I quite like, I'm generalising here, but she obviously bowls pace on with the new ball, tries to swing it. And then essentially she's bowling slower balls when she comes back with her actual quicker ball being the change of pace. And that's, I don't think that's necessarily a bad policy. I don't think you can stick with it exclusively because you're going to get lined up a little bit. But it shows growth and development in her game. How do you see things lining up for Bangladesh? Do you see that all three spinners playing? Do you see two all-rounders? Do you see Kemp and Nat Siverbrunt? Do you see Danny Gibson? Do you see two strike bowlers playing in Filer and Bell? What would be your sort of overview of how they might approach that first game?
Yeah, one thing I asked John Lewis was about the pace and the role that it will play as the tournament goes on. Because one question I have is in that starting 11 for the first game is, do they go both Bell and Filer, or do they actually just go spin heavy from the off and just back their spinners to squeeze the opposition through those middle overs? And that the answer that they give then could dictate whether Filer or Bell makes the plane, because the other bases that they have to cover Amy Jones. So Bess Heath will have to go. They will have to cover probably Sophie Eccleston. So Lindsay Smith, you could argue, will have to go. And then they probably have to have a bit of batting cover as well. So you would suggest that that's Sophia Dunkley. And then do you go Danny Gibson as that all-rounder cover for someone like Nat Siverbrunt? So that they're sort of your four players who could be there and in the squad, but not necessarily in the starting 11. So I've gone, should I just go into what my 11 might be?
Carry on.
So I'll keep going. So the Boosh, Danny Wyatt, Alice Capsey, NSB, Heather Knight, Amy Jones, Charlie Dean, Sophie Eccleston, and then, sorry, I've missed out Freya Kemp, Sarah Glenn, and then either Bell or Filer. I don't know. What would you do? Would you go extra pace early on in that first game? Because then if you do, all the spinners will miss out, won't they?
Yeah, it's difficult because I agree with you. The top six is picks itself, I think now. Yeah. And I think that is an absolute given. Within that top six, you actually do have bowling options in Nat Siverbrunt. You've got Alice Capsey. You've got Heather Knight. So you've got three extra bowlers already there. So now we're talking about from seven down to 11. The three spinners have to play, and I don't care what the conditions are. I think they are good. They're not good, they're world class. And I think that it doesn't matter what surface they're playing on, they're still going to be successful. I think we've seen them successful on green decks. I think we've seen them successful on turning decks. So there's three more spots. So now you're talking about two more spots to look at. Your top six, the three spinners. Yeah. I think you're looking at then an all-rounder, a pace bowling, a seam bowling all-rounder. And for me, it would be Freya Kemp ahead of Danny Gibson. And I think you want to have a bolstered batting lineup in the subcontinent rather than playing two pace bowlers in Filer and Kemp. Filer and Bell. And so I will be tempted to play Freya Kemp in that. And then the toss-up is between Bell and Filer.
Yes.
Now, I think Bell will get the nod, and she has earned it by absolutely 100% she has earned it. I can throw a very strong argument for Filer to play because you, in the subcontinent, you have Kemp, a left-arm seam option. You have Nat Siverbrunt, both of whom can take the new ball, should you so desire. And then you have Filer, who is 7 or 8 miles an hour quicker than Lauren Bell. And I think, depending on the conditions and having that little X factor bowler, and let me tell you, I think Lauren Filer has bowled some serious heat this series. At Canterbury, she rushed Georgia Plimmer. She rushed Mealy Kerr. She bowled one or two very quick deliveries, 78 mile an hour. And in the women's game, that is slippery. There's not many quicker than that in the world. And when you're rushing a player such as Mealy Kerr, and it's coming on to him. We saw with Perry last year in the test match at Trent Bridge. When you are rushing these world-class players, that is something different that no one else has got. Yeah. It's not like you're short of bowling options. So I would hope that that is a conversation that is had within the England coaches. I'm not saying that Lauren Bell shouldn't play. I think she's earned the right to play, and I think she's earned the right to get a new ball. She's just a different type of bowler, and it's what England think they will need in Bangladesh. And so I think it will be Freya Kemp and Lauren Bell. I think that will be the first one. I think you're going to go into the first game with your most settled and solid side. But do I take Lauren Farmer? Yeah, I do. I do take her. And I know of those 11 that we've picked, and I think we're pretty much of similar mind, those four extras, as you mentioned, Bess Heath has to be one. Lindsay Smith has to be one. And I say she has to be one. It's interesting because your two other bowling options are Heather Knight and Alice Capsey. Do you necessarily need another spin option? Can you go a different way? But it will be a very interesting selection meeting and who they take, because whittling 18 down to 15, not as easy as people think. But it looks a good side with a lot of bases covered, with a very deep batting lineup, and as good an opportunity to try and win a trophy as England will ever have, I think, in the place that they are right now. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good place to be, isn't it? I remember in years gone by when the squad sort of picked itself and, you know, the starting 11 was always the same and there wasn't really enough depth to have these headachy type of selection conversation. So it's a really good place to be. I'm excited actually. We'll have to find out when the squad's going to be announced. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait for that. And of course, you will hear it first. Well, you won't hear it first, but you'll hear it pretty much. You'll hear it relatively soon after it's announced on the Daggers and Lids podcast. By the way, we've got other things that we will cover in subsequent podcasts, but at this moment in time, there's a lot of cricket going on across the world. And we mentioned about the India-South Africa series. We've not even mentioned that. We will get to all of these things. But right now, there is so much going on for both of us as well. With 100 starting around the corner, we'll probably do a 100 preview. Have you noticed I said probably now? I've not committed to it. We should do a 100 preview. And we probably will do a 100 preview. But I don't know where you are, or where I am, or what we're doing. So we will do plenty of 100 stuff from the women's perspective. And again, more cricket for some of those players that we mentioned. You know, it's going to be great in the women's competition, in the 100 especially. I look forward to that more than anything. So we've got the Rachel Hayhoe Flint to cover. And again, we will do that. I think we'll probably do that during the business end of the competition a lot more and do a more thorough review. We're still across all of your club spotlights as well. I had another couple of emails come in. Please do keep your club spotlights coming in. We've got a whole winter to talk about women's cricket as well. Yeah. And we want to celebrate all of the women's sections at your club, those who are fully, you know, that they're already integrated into the club, and those who are just starting out and you're doing great things within women's cricket at the grassroots level, get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us via social media at Charles Dagnall, at Lydia Greenway on X. I am at Charles Dagnall on Instagram, or better still, email us, daggersandlids@outlook.com. That's daggersandlids@outlook.com. And tell us your story, send us pics, and we will feature you on the podcast, because we love doing that and we love seeing what's going on across the country. We better do this little bit of news, Lydia, because this occurred about a day ago and it's still relatively fresh in our mind. The ECB have confirmed the formation of Tier 2 and Tier 3 in the women's domestic structure. Now, we already knew about Tier 1 and the counties within that, and the two counties who will get Tier 1 status in the future, which will be Yorkshire and Glamorgan. So, Derbyshire, Glamorgan, Gloucestershire, Kent, Leicestershire, Northamptonshire, Middlesex, Sussex, Worcestershire and Yorkshire will make up Tier 2 in the 2025 season. The 10 counties... those 10 counties, they're going to play 50 over and 20 over cricket. They will provide further information on the competition structure and the schedule in due course. obviously all of the new funding that's coming in will assist those tier two counties to try and get some very, very good standard out there, and that annual investment up to £19 million across the entirety of the women's game. Tier 3 status will be awarded to all national counties. Now, this is an interesting sentence for me. All national counties who would like to participate. So they don't have to, but if you'd like to, they can be in the new tier 3 competition for 2025. Yorkshire become Tier 1 next in 2026. Glamorgan Tier 1 in 2027. And the ECB have set the Tier 1 standard going to be, they're going to be expanding it to 12 teams by 2029. There is no promotion or relegation from 2025 to 2028. So basically it's saying the rest of the major counties will get tier two status and the national counties will get tier three. What's your initial thought? Oh, what we should say is that we are going to get stuck into this, hopefully, with Beth Barrett Wild. She is going to be a guest on the programme as soon as we can get her. She is the director of the Women's Professional Game. But what's the sort of headline for you, Lyd?
Yeah, I guess I've obviously read that and have read a bit of the reaction as well. I think there's a few grumblings that obviously the established counties are just automatically becoming the tier two counties, regardless of how good other counties' applications might be. So maybe there is something to that. But I think in its, you know, how it looks, the one thing I really like about it is the tier twos get the opportunity to become a tier one, obviously with that expansion. So there's motivation there for the tier two counties to plot out a roadmap as to how they will get into tier one status. So there's a bit of a carrot there. But the one thing that I love the most about it is the knockout cup that they're going to have, which will include all tiers. So from one to three, every county can enter. It's a bit like the FA Cup, isn't it?
Yeah,
totally. Cricket. And I love that because it will allow tier three counties to play against tier one counties, all that sort of stuff, and it really does create opportunity. So yeah, I mean, I'm not grumbling too much about the counties that have got picked. I mean, I don't know, that might be a bit too blasé to say, but it sort of makes sense if they've got the right infrastructures in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope they incorporate promotion and relegation in down the line.
Yeah, that's
I really
fair
hope
point.
They do. My other worry slightly is, let's say you're a tier two county and you've got someone who's 17 years old and is, you know, what is to stop? And they've been developed by that county, Leicestershire. Now, I know it happens, and it happens in the men's game and stuff like that. But if you spend time developing a female cricketer, and you're Gloucestershire, and at this moment in time shows a little bit of something, their leading run scorer in tier two, what's to stop them getting picked off, just simply picked off by the tier one county? She's going to want to be playing tier one cricket because that's the highest standard, but then, you know, that particular county will feel a little bit slighted that their player has gone off. Now, I know that's what happens in the big wide world and stuff, and that's, you know, hence, if you're the leading run scorer in tier two, and it's Gloucestershire, say, and you also are top of the table, but you can't get promoted, and therefore you're going to lose that player. I mean, I know it's a little bit of a stretch, but there are one or two things that just sort of, I'm not doing it for the sake of it. I'm actually looking at potential real world situations. But look, in the end of the day, I'm with you. In that there is an expansion to the women's domestic structure, and there is a very strong structure. There are going to be more professional women players, which is only going to be a good thing. It's up to us to actually pick it apart a little bit and find, because that's what our job is. But overall, I think it looks overwhelmingly positive. Having said that, we are going to speak to Beth Barrett Wild. So any questions that you have, and I'm not talking about you, Lydia, your questions will be answered anyway. But you, our dear listeners and viewers, have any questions you have about the tier structure, please do get them into us and we will ask Beth. And we're more than happy to do so. Again, I mentioned those ways of getting in touch with us. You'll have already heard them. So do get in touch if you've got any questions about that, and we shall put them to Beth Barrett Wild, and she will be a guest on the show, and we can sort of grill her a little bit about what that means. But overwhelmingly, I think it's probably a very positive thing.
Yeah, the one thing actually I'm really keen to ask her is I don't think there's any sort of salary caps for the counties. So obviously they've put in some funding, but from what I gather, there's nothing stopping counties from adding in extra money. And that is my one concern, is that will the richest counties just suddenly get all the best players? But anyway, we will find that out, won't
we? If I'm honest, that's exactly what I would do. I mean, if I was Lancashire or Durham, say for argument's sake, who haven't had, you know, a huge history, they've got a great history of women's cricket within their area and producing players and stuff. But if I was Durham, I'd sort of say, right, here's £5 million. Go and get the best players, like the all of the England players, and sort of like, yeah, there you go, and just win everything. Because there is no salary cap from what I could see. So that is totally what I could do, or I would do. Anyway. All of those things to come. So, look, do keep listening, because we're going to be talking about the 100 a lot. We're going to be talking about a variety of different topics. But because they're coming up thick and fast, we don't want to pile them in and not touch on those items in this one podcast. We'll leave this one to the topics we've already covered. And make sure you download, subscribe, whether you're watching us on YouTube, and who wouldn't? Because, you know, we're a decent watch. and also subscribe to us on wherever you get your podcast platform. I know you're itching to say something else.
Oh, you could tell. Did you pick that up from me
waving your pencil manically? Yes, carry on.
Well, yeah. I didn't know if you were going to wrap it up or not, but I just wanted to squeeze in a bit of the 100 news about Grace Harris. I just saw that on the social
media. Earlier. So
Grace Harris has
Lydia. Yeah, I've been in the garden. I've got bits of hedge stuck in my transplanted hair. So no, I've not seen this.
Well,
carry on.
Whilst you were in the bushes, breaking news of Grace Harris being unavailable for the 100 for the London Spirit. So she's actually going to be replaced by Dipti Sharma and Erin Burns, because Dipti will have to go off to play in the Asia Cup. So just wanted to keep everyone across. That's why I was frantically waving my pencil. But I'll let you wrap up the pod now, Daggers, and get
okay,
back to you.
I shall do that, and I shall get back in the bush. Shall I? Well, look, thank you, Asaf. It's great to see you, and I will see you next week, I am sure, and in some capacity. In fact, I'll see you Friday, tomorrow. I'll see you on Saturday at Birmingham, because it's the last Vitality Blast match. But we shall get this uploaded as quickly as we can. I hope you've enjoyed listening, and look forward to your company the next time on the Dax and Lids podcast. Mm-hmm.